Well, hi, everybody. Thanks for joining me for the first quarterly briefing of the year. What I'm going to talk about today is our priority campaigns for this year. I'm going to have to say next slide a lot on this call because I am on the road and not in control of the slide system. So if we can do the next slide. All right, so our endangered species program has a vast number of projects that it'll be working on this coming year, but I'm just going to talk about two of those today. And the first is our continuing work on wolves, which should come to a big head this year for a couple of different reasons. On the one hand, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service intends to complete its proposal to delist and strip federal protection for all wolves in the lower 48 outside of the Southwest, and which is going to open up things to even more wolf killing. So we've been battling this at the site level and at the national policy level for a number of years. That's all going to come to a head this year, which is going to be a very big deal. The current status is that wolves are delisted in Montana, Idaho, Eastern Oregon, Eastern Washington, but they're fully protected in Wyoming due to a lawsuit we won earlier last year, striking down that delisting decision. They are currently listed and fully protected in Western Oregon, Western Washington, and California. And the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service wants to strip those protections away. They had been completely delisted and unprotected in the Great Lakes states, but due to a recent court victory there, they're now relisted in the Great Lakes states, fully protected. And then we've got wandering wolves in California, Utah, northern Arizona, quite likely in Colorado, which currently would be fully protected wolves, but with this Fish and Wildlife Service proposal would all be stripped away of their protections. And in addition to that, the new Congress has immediately moved to introduce riders and bills to strip away wolf protections in various areas. And so we're looking at battling Congress in the short term over riders to delist wolves in the Great Lakes and in Wyoming. And quite soon, I'm sure we're going to see a proposal to do that nationally. Since we've been so successful in blocking fish and wildlife efforts to get this national delisting through, we expect the Fish and Wildlife Service is actually going to support its congressional override. They may not do so publicly, but they'll probably do it behind the scenes. So we'll be battling Fish and Wildlife Service in the courts, but we're going to have to be battling Congress at the political level to keep protections for wolves going. So that will be a very big campaign this year. And next slide. So the other one is going to be a big congressional attack on the Endangered Species Act itself. We were quite certain this was going to happen as soon as the Republicans were able to control both the House and the Senate, and that's immediately what we saw. And so we'll be seeing a whole variety of congressional bills come up. Some will be species specific to remove certain species from the endangered species list, like the lesser prairie chicken. Some will attack particular provisions of the law, like getting rid of critical habitat, removing funding. And there'll be attempts as well to amend the act as a whole, effectively rewrite the whole Endangered Species Act to emasculate it. So that's going to be a very, very big campaign for us over the next few years. We face a similar issue back when Gingrich came into office and Clinton was president. We did very well back then. We held on to almost all provisions of the act through that onslaught. But I will say we had very strong support from the Clinton administration in that battle, and I'm not sure there was support from the Obama administration, which is really, really critical. So it's going to be tougher in that regard. But on the other hand, Raul Grijalva is the minority chair for the Environment Committee in the House this year. He's a very, very strong supporter of the Endangered Species Act and has very close relationships with the center. So that will put us in a pretty good position to influence the Democratic position overall. And thus far, the Democrats in the House have been better, more aggressive than the White House and have been willing to put pressure on the White House when it feels the White House isn't doing enough, which is a good sign because that's what we're going to need to win this battle. So the next slide. This is a picture of the vaquita, which is probably at this point the most endangered mammal in the world, certainly the most endangered marine mammal. It's declined precipitously to a little under 100 individuals, including probably about 25 breeding age females in the last year. And our endangered, our international program, which is a small but important program, is really focusing immediately in the next year to save it from extinction. It's really on an incredible decline. The next picture. This is a vaquita here, and this is a typical size of vaquita. It's very small. It's this world's smallest dolphin, and it occurs in the northern Sea of Cortez, not far from the Arizona border. And it is being driven extinct by gillnet fishing. We can have the next slide. And here's one caught in a gillnet. And what's happening is there's illegal fishing of another endangered fish, the totoaba, which is extremely lucrative, though illegal. And then the vaquita is caught in those gill nets and is dying in huge numbers. So we're working very intensely with a coalition of both American and Mexican conservation groups and the Mexican government to try to resolve this issue as rapidly as possible. It's a very, very complicated issue. There's a biosphere reserve up there, which is supposed to bring protection to the area, but it's not really enforced. The totoaba fishing is prohibited, so prohibiting it more is not going to help. It's illegal fishing that's going on, and you've also got poor fishing communities up there that with individuals who feel like they can make a lot of money by fishing this totoaba illegally. So you've also sort of got a community development shift in a community economic pattern as well that needs to happen. So very complicated issue, but one that really needs to get resolved very, very rapidly, or this species actually could go extinct literally within 3 or 4 years. So next slide. So our oceans program is pretty wide-ranging, but a good chunk of it has been dealing with offshore oil drilling, and it's been quite successful in stopping every single new permit for offshore oil drilling in the Arctic in the last 7 years. There's not been one new drilling operation that's gone into effect up there, and that's been its primary zone. But we've got a new threat now. I can do the next slide. And that is that the Obama administration just days ago put out its new five-year national offshore drilling plan. And in that plan says that it wants to open up drilling on the Atlantic coast from Virginia to Georgia, where currently there's no offshore oil drilling. And so we're going to have to invest a lot of time and energy in this coming year to overturn that plan, which is going to include both legal work, technical commenting work on the plan, but also political work at the national and state level to roll this back. Because the problem is, once you allow some offshore oil drilling in, then more falls. It opens up a door, and these become kind of industrial landscapes, and it's very, very hard to remove the machinery from an industrial landscape. You really have to prevent it from getting there at all. And that's why we've had this big focus in the Arctic to keep it out, and now we're going to have a similar focus on the Atlantic coast as well. So that'll be a very, very big project coming up for us this year. And next shot. So our Urban Wildlands program works to protect endangered species, open space, and water in these areas where the urban zone starts to blend into more natural landscapes. Next slide. And where's nothing on that slide? Here we go. And one of its biggest campaigns the last few years will really be coming to fruition in a big way, coming to a head in a big way, 2015, and that's the battle for to protect Tejon Ranch. This is private land north of Los Angeles, and it is the largest private land sort of wilderness area left in California, one of the largest, actually probably on the entire West Coast. Right now there's virtually no development in the entire area, and the people who own it want to build three cities inside it in one fell swoop. And it's a critically important area for endangered condors. It's one of their primary habitat zones, and so battling to save it is a huge campaign for us in 2015. We've been fighting this at lower levels in state and county courts over smaller permits to date, but in 2015 we'll be battling the big federal permit that really makes it possible, and it's where this project will either live or die. And so you'll be hearing more about that in this coming year, and we're pretty confident that we're going to be able to win this case, essentially kill the entire development plan, and that would be just a great resolution to a long five-year battle we've been fighting there. So next slide. So our Climate Law Institute is working on many, many fronts, and one of the biggest ones is Clean Air Act implementation. We were one of the plaintiffs who got one Supreme Court case saying that the Clean Air Act needed to be invoked to rein in greenhouse gas emissions, and that has led to a long series of decisions by the EPA to regulate different sectors of the economy for greenhouse gas effects. There's one rule for transportation, a separate rule for power plants, one rule for ships, a different rule for airplanes. So a tremendous amount of work there, and of course every one of these becomes a huge battleground with industry and with Congress. Congress has been doing everything it can over the past few years to slow down and harass the EPA as it tries to make these decisions. And now that it has the House and the Senate, we're seeing it more aggressively trying to actually pass legislation to effectively prevent EPA from regulating greenhouse gases. So that will be a very big project for us. We've also got a really important state-level project. Let's see the next slide. And that's, we're trying to stop fracking altogether in California. There is considerable fracking in California, but it was set to dramatically ramp up to the level we see in other states such as Texas, North Dakota, Pennsylvania. And so we, through litigation, have been able to stop new fracking on most federal lands in California, at least for the time being, but there's a tremendous amount of fracking going on in private lands. And so we've got a big running battle going on there at the political level, communication level, to get fracking curtailed or stopped throughout the state. It's in addition to an environmental issue, it's a huge social justice issue, because a lot of this fracking on private lands occurs near poorer communities and causes tremendous air pollution around those communities. And so one of the things we're working with is some cities and counties to set up buffer zones around hospitals, schools, where people live, to stop new fracking in these areas. We've had some success in getting ordinances passed, ballot measures passed. An industry comes back and sues to strike those down, and it's a very, very intense campaign, and we'll be putting a lot of energy into that in this coming year. So next slide. And our public lands program works to protect public lands throughout the country, mostly federal lands, so those would be the Forest Service, BLM, Park Service, National Wildlife Refuges, but also some state lands as well, where they're important. So next slide. So one of our big priorities next year is going to be on the logging front, and attempting to stop tremendous old-growth logging plans in Alaska. And then in the Southwest to restore degraded forests. So it's not so much that a lot of old growth is being logged down there, but you've got national forests that have been beat up from 100 years of logging, fire suppression, livestock grazing, and we're trying to get these restored and done so in a way that doesn't spin out of control and become a big industrial process. And the Forest Service has a tendency to want to take every possible action and do it at a large industrial scale and screw it up badly. So we're spending a lot of time in the Southwest trying to effectively not just get new decisions, but change the culture of the Forest Service so that it can learn to operate with a lighter, more ecological hand in doing restoration. And next slide. Do we have another slide coming up? And then battling the development of tar sands in the U.S. is a very big project for us in the coming year. This is a picture of what tar sands looks like. It's an extremely devastating, damaging technology for extracting oil. And essentially what happened, what we're looking at here is traditionally the way oil is gotten is the oil is deep underground. It's in these sort of reservoir pockets, and you go in and you suck it out of these pockets with a straw, more or less. With tar sand, it's very different. What you've got here is essentially this goopy, sandy tar that is in shallow areas. It's not deep down. It's not in pockets. And so what you end up doing is effectively strip mining the surface, pulling up this mucky mess, and then trying to extract the oily tar out of the sand, and so it's extremely devastating to the surface areas, extremely polluting, and insanely inefficient in the sense of the amount of fossil fuels it takes to extract the tar sand fossil fuel is enormous. So it's, you know, one of the worst possible fossil fuels you could ever use. Now, tar sand extraction to date has mostly been happening in Canada. There's very little of it in the U.S., but as Canada has developed that technology, the oil companies in the U.S. want to do it here, and in particular down in Utah. And so we're aggressively campaigning to prevent this from happening. And again, it's similar to the offshore oil drilling in the Atlantic, which is that if you can prevent it from ever starting up in the first place, you're vastly more likely to preserve these landscapes, because once it starts to happen, there's a precedent. The agency feels like it's business as usual, and it just becomes part of their normal system of operation. So it's very, very critical that we prevent this from happening in Utah. Next slide. So our population and sustainability program has been growing and reaching just greater and greater numbers of people with more issues as well. You know, it started off working primarily just in the area of population growth, and that's still a very, very big campaign for it. We'll do the next slide. And one of the areas where we've had just a tremendous amount of success, and we're doing a lot more work in this coming year, is with our endangered species condoms. So we give these out freely. I can't remember the exact number now, but I think we've given out close to 1 million of them. But the real value of them is not the availability of a condom. There's, you know, there's condoms everywhere. There's no lack of condoms in the U.S. It's that through the process of giving them out, it's an organizing opportunity. It's a communications opportunity. And so we've been able to develop a network of volunteers going out in their local communities to distribute them, and therefore get the entire community talking about overpopulation problems, and been able to generate also a tremendous amount of public media about this. So people are reading about overpopulation in the newspapers, seeing it on television. We'll do the next slide. So this is an outdated map of where we've got our condom distributor network, but you know, as you can see, it's all over the country. We're in every state, and this has distributors, but these aren't distributors in the sense of someone, you know, sends out boxes and stuff. These are people who go out to their local church and have a meeting at the church and talk to the people there and distribute the condoms, or they're on college campuses, or they're going to local fairs, people handing them out in bars, people standing on street corners. It's all manner of it. And so the real purpose here is, you know, is to communicate and talk to people, not so much distribute. It's been very, very effective in this arena. And then next slide. And we've added a new component to this program, which is to deal with the ecological effects of meat production and consumption, because you know, how we get our food is the greatest way that we impact the planet. And as we grow to 7 billion and more, feeding that many people is what's primarily driving the destruction of ecosystems around the globe. And within the food system, by far the most damaging of that is the production of meat. And we've cleared just massive amounts of land. Most cropland in the world, most cropland in the United States, exists to feed cattle, not to feed people. About 40% of all arable land on the entire planet is now used to produce cattle. And so it's just a devastating, devastating effect. This is a photograph of a feedlot. And one of the issues you have there is not only the land destruction, but production of tremendous, tremendous amounts of pollution on these, which get into the waterways and are just devastating. And so in 2015, we're going to launch some programs to really go after the pollution effect of these feedlots. And again, it's also a social justice issue because they tend to occur in poorer communities, and they're the ones subjected to the pollution, which is both air and water pollution, from these feedlots. Next slide. And then we've got the launch of our environmental health program that is just happening at this moment. In fact, I'm up in Portland right now with the new director and staff of that program in a development meeting. And so this is really exciting. This is a program that's going to focus on pollution and its effect on the environment, including humans. And it's really one of the most pervasive problems that we have on the planet. We've got so many toxins, so many chemicals, so much pollution going into the environment, and then having these different chemicals synergistically interact with each other, that it's poisoning wildlife all over the planet. And you've got amphibian deformations, which get a fair amount of media attention because so many chemicals are getting into the waterways where they live. We've got lead poisoning, killing condors, bald eagles, golden eagles, and many other species around the country. You've got this CAFO pollution I was just talking about, and numerous other impacts that are just really wiping out wildlife populations. Please look at the next slide. And one of the big focused areas in 2015 will be pesticides, as there's many different kinds of toxic pollution out there, but pesticides is one of the most damaging in terms of the amount of acreage where pesticides are applied each year, and also their effect on wildlife, because unlike some pollution, this pollution is directly designed to kill plants and animals. And it does so dramatically. It's one of the biggest, largely unmanaged impacts on wildlife right now in the United States. And so we're working to stop and reform pesticides at the application level where they're getting used, but we're also working at the national registration level to get entire groups of pesticides banned or have their use area severely limited. And, you know, all the past work on pesticides has mostly focused on human health. And so you've got all these suite of studies for many decades about human health, but very little has been done to study or manage the impacts of pesticides on wildlife, particularly endangered species. So that'll be a very big focus for us in 2015. So next slide. And that is a summary, at least, of some of our top priorities. Obviously, we're working on quite a bit more. We have just a huge breadth of activity a year. And I hope you feel that when you see these kinds of things and successes and so forth, that you feel like that's your success, too, and your work, too, because it would not happen without the support we've gotten from you all. So thank you very, very much.